We're continuing our Freedom Friday series this morning as we have a local veteran in with us this morning. Mark Fagan of Atlantic joins us here this morning. A lot of folks might know Mark from some of his charitable efforts here in the community and also as the proprietor at the Fireside Lounge here in Atlantic. But before he got into all that, he was one of the guys helping to protect us. How are you this morning?
Good. How about yourself, Jim?
I'm good. Thanks for coming in this morning. Appreciate it.
No problem.
I want to talk a little bit about your service. You were a Marine.
That is correct.
How did you ever get into the Marine Corps?
Ever since I was about eighth grade, I started to really get into history. I started studying the history of the Marine Corps, and ever since then, I wanted to be a Marine. So I always set my goal to becoming a Marine.
Single focus.
Single focus. That's all I wanted. I did good in school, but I knew I didn't want to go to college. No one else in my family was ever a Marine, but it's just something I felt like I wanted to do. I liked the history, the tradition, and just... doing the history back in World War II, you see Bougainville, you see Okinawa, Iwo Jima, Guadalcanal. Those are Marines, and I really love that part of the Marine Corps.
Is there a history of military service in your family?
Not at all. I have four siblings, and I'm the only one in the military. My father was never in the military. No grandparents, no uncles. I was the only one in the military in my family.
So was it a shock to your family then when a young guy comes up and says, hey, this is what I want to do?
At first it was. When I joined, I was a junior in high school, and I was 17. And they have the delayed entry program, which they still have today. And you could join and ship out a year later. And since I was 17, my parents had to sign for me. And they were not too happy about it. But they finally came around and realized something I really wanted to do. And they know the recruiter told them that I had to stay out of trouble and continue to get good grades. So they signed for me, and they knew that I had a goal set, and then they were behind it.
So they were pretty supportive from that point
forward.
They
were very supportive from that point.
When they had a better idea of what was in store.
That is correct.
Very good. So you enlist in the Marines, a young guy right out of high school. It's the early 80s, and off you go. Where did you head?
First, I went to Parris Island, South Carolina. Since I am from Ohio originally, if you're east of the Mississippi, you go to Parris Island. West of Mississippi goes to San Diego, so I went to Parris Island. The day before I graduated boot camp, we met our parents, and actually we were called to the quarter deck when we came back. That's the front of the squad bay, and we were told then we're probably going to war. That was on September 2nd of 83. The Russians just shot down a Korean airliner, and they said we were probably going to war. Ronald Reagan was president. And so we were actually put right on red alert as soon as I was graduating boot camp.
So, what's that like for a young guy?
That was kind of scary. you never knew what was going to happen. A lot of things were going on. You had Gaddafi. You had the line in the sand. You had Beirut. I was in during the Beirut crisis. I've seen those Marines come back. That was all in 83. Grenada happened in 84. There was a lot of stuff going on. And even though it was a calm time, the Berlin Wall was starting to come down slowly, but still, everyone was still on eggshells back then.
Mm-hmm. Well, you just never know. Things can change and percolate so quickly around the world and then escalate very rapidly when politicians get involved and try to, frame everything, that all of a sudden, there are real people out there that have to take care of these things.
That is correct. And one thing people don't know a lot is the Marines guard all the embassies, and anytime there's a problem with one of the embassies, the Marines are first to go. And that's why we were the first in Grenada, and that's why we were always in Beirut. And a prime example was after I re-enlisted, I wanted to be in an infantry unit of Marines. My job was an ammunition tech, and I had ammunition on five different ships at one time that I was in charge of. We were actually helping Iraq fight Iran, and this is back in 87. And it's just funny how things change. 4 years later, we're fighting Iraq after... We were just helping them fight Iran. So a lot of things change.
Did you get to see a chunk of the world then?
I saw about 12 different countries. I spent about a year and a half on ship. And I've been all over the Persian Gulf area, been over the Far East, been down to Somalia, Kenya, Europe. So I saw a big chunk of the world.
You did. As an ammo tech, what primarily is your job, for those who don't know?
An ammunition tech is, when I worked in an ammo dump, it's pretty much just supply. But then when I was with a battalion of Marines, which is about 1,000, 1,200 Marines, you're in charge of anything from the 9mm rounds all the way up to the 55 Hauser rounds. Anything in between, Willie Pete, which is white phosphorus. I was in charge of ordering it all. I was in charge of delivering it all. I pretty much had a blank checkbook, and I wrote out the checks for it. We had an allocation. But when we were going to the Persian Gulf to help fight the war out there, we had to order special stuff, and I had to make sure my unit got the proper stuff and everything. I'd have to place it on the ships, and I would have to know exactly which ship we were pulling it from, because you're going out with five different ships. So you have to know exactly where it is, and you have to let the Navy know, hey, I need the ammunition from this ship on shore at this time. So it was very exciting, very exciting.
Very busy.
Yes, it was.
Sounds like, all the time. Did you have a big staff then, too, to work with?
I only had three.
No,
three
not a very people. Big staff at all.
Not at all.
All right. Well, that was part of your work then. I understand you also spent some time as a recruiter.
Yes. I was a Marine Corps recruiter right outside New York City. I was in Orange County and in Sullivan County, which is right across the river. Everyone says it's upstate. It's not upstate. It's exactly parallel to New York City. You just cross over. And I put 52 young men into the Marine Corps.
With all due respect to all of the fighting men and women out there on the front lines, a lot of folks will look at it and say, recruiter, that's one of the tougher jobs out there in the military. What do you think that you've done it?
I agree. It was a choice that you could not get out of. Either you're a recruiter or you're a drill instructor, and I don't have a voice to be a drill instructor. So I decided to stay on the recruiter side. The thing with the Marine Corps recruiters is that the Marine Corps is so small. When I was in, the Marine Corps was only about 175,000 strong, and it's so small that you really have to pick the elite. No high school dropouts. We were really going for the community colleges. Your SAT scores better be at least 1,000. We did sit-throughs. That means they went through 12th grade, and they just finished 12th grade, but they didn't get a diploma. But they really had to score high in their SATs. And this is when a war is going on, because I was recruiting from 89 to 92, so the Gulf War was going on. And the Marine Corps still had those high standards.
Difficult job? What was your sales pitch like for some of these young people?
The Marine Corps, we try to sell the stuff you can't touch, the honor, the commitment, the courage, the integrity. And all the services provide the same education, the same pay. Nothing's different about that. The Marine Corps, we study our history. We're very proud of our history. And that's why if you drive around town, you'll see more Marine Corps stickers than any other service. You know, like the Army, for example, they have over 1 million people. The Marine, like I said, at that time was like 175,000, 190,000. But you see more Marine Corps stickers, more Marine Corps flags, because everyone's proud to be a Marine. And I'm sure most civilians heard the word Semper Fidelis or Semper Fi. I say to this day to former Marines, it means always faithful. And Marines really believe in that to this day, that we are faithful to God, country, and Corps. And it's in that order, and they teach you that. You're faithful to God, country, and Corps.
It's not just during Service Academy football games that there's a little competitiveness and rivalry, huh?
Not at all. Not at all. And yes, the Marine Corps is the Department of the Navy.
But that doesn't mean they don't work together well when they have to in times of need.
I'll tell you, the Marine Corps needs the Navy. The Navy needs the Marine Corps. We provide security for them. In turn, the Navy gives us all the medical profession and the religious personnel come from the Navy.
Sure.
So we work hand in hand together.
9 years of service. Why did you make the decision to leave?
They told me if I stay in any longer, I have to stay as a recruiter outside New York City. And that was just not for me. I liked the Marine Corps a lot. If I could have gone back to the fleet, I would have definitely done that. But staying as a recruiter, you know, putting 52 young men in the Marine Corps. And I'm still in contact with about three or four of those to this day. You know, and I thought it was just time for me to get out. And they were starting to cut back then as the first Gulf War was coming down, winding down.
Mm-hmm. Looking back on it, again, here's a young Mark Fagan, very young Mark, who has this, it's bent into his mind that he wants to join the Marines. He wants to be a Marine. Now, all these years later, looking back on doing that, good decision?
Great decision. I would never give it back. One thing I like to share is that when we were coming through the Red Sea, the USS Stark, after it got hit, was coming out, and we saw that coming back to the United States, and we all went to the we called port side to render honors after they took a missile And, you know, that there just gives you pride in your country. It really does.
Mm-hmm. And what you've learned, the opportunities that you had, you've used those now later on in life?
Oh, yes. It's the military teaches you something, especially the courage and the honor and commitment. It's something that you cannot learn anywhere else. And if I had an opportunity, I think everyone should give at least 2 years to their country. I don't care if it's a military, you know, it could be, you know, volunteering somewhere, forestry or something, civil patrol. You know, that's still around. People don't know that. But, you know, something like that, I think everyone should do that.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Well, we appreciate you coming in and visiting with us about some of your experiences and things. And, you know, hope somebody picks something out of this that they might be able to use. Maybe when they're talking to their child, when they come in and say, "Dad, I think I want to be a Marine." Maybe a good conversation starter.
If people want to come talk to me, you know, I'll tell them the truth about the Marine Corps. You got to join for the right reasons. That's the whole thing. You got to join for the right reasons. There's a lot of wrong reasons, but there's also a lot of right reasons.
Well, again, thanks for coming by, and thanks for your service. We salute you for all that you've done. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Jim.